Chapter 32. Harry fell back onto the bed, feeling blissfully content. It had been a rocky start to the day, but the rest of the afternoon and evening had been wonderful. After dinner, they'd all retired to the drawing room. Remus and Narcissa had been conversing pleasantly about a wide array of topics, before Remus had politely excused himself. Harry had been a little concerned, but Remus reassured him before he left that he was perfectly fine, and that Harry should simply enjoy the rest of the evening. Draco had challenged Harry to a game of wizard's chess to distract him, where Harry had lost badly, but he'd enjoyed it nonetheless. Victoria had played on the floor, crawling around and getting attention from everyone. It had been a relaxing evening, and Harry couldn't help but think that was how families were supposed to be. It had reminded him of evenings at the Burrow, only much quieter. Harry and Draco had worked together to give Victoria a bath and prepare her for bed earlier. Harry didn't care one whit that they were too young to be parents. He had loved every minute of the rather domestic evening. He was looking forward to doing it all over again the next day. "You look goofily sappy," Draco said dryly, standing beside the bed and staring down at him. "So? What's your point?" Harry retorted, not losing his grin. "Just stating a fact," Draco said, a half-smile curling his lips. The half-smile slowly turned wicked. "We have some real privacy here, finally. What do you want to do?" he asked. In an instant, Harry's mind shifted priorities, and he was prepared to do whatever Draco had in mind. "Whatever you want," he said. "What if I told you I wanted you to strip and then sit back on the bed?" Draco said. "I can do that," Harry said, sitting up. Draco smirked at him. "You're a little eager, aren't you?" he said in amusement. Harry moved to kneel on the edge of the bed, pulling Draco close to him. "Draco, I love being with you. I love how you make me feel," he said. He tugged Draco closer until his knees were touching the bed, and their bodies were pressed together. "Do you feel how hard I already am for you?" he asked huskily. "I feel how hard you are, and I think you are eager as well." Draco groaned, unable to deny it. Their mouths met in a passionate kiss, tongues exploring each other's mouths as eagerly as they'd been talking about. It wasn't until Harry started to move against Draco that Draco pushed him back, panting heavily. "Strip!" Draco ordered. Harry blinked dazedly for a moment, before remembering what Draco had said he wanted. When he did remember, he moved quickly to strip his clothes off before climbing back onto the bed. Naked and incredibly hard, Harry sat leaning back against the headboard as Draco directed. He had no idea what Draco had planned, but he was more than willing to go along if they were both going to be naked. His eyes tracked Draco's movements, watching as the other boy methodically removed his clothing, his movements slow and deliberate. He watched curiously as Draco stepped to the nightstand and removed a small jar with some clear substance inside. Harry's eyes narrowed suspiciously. "Draco, where'd that come from?" he asked. Draco smirked wickedly. "It came from your little bag of goodies that the matching pair gave you," he admitted, climbing up onto the bed. "You've been into the bag without me?" Harry couldn't keep himself from asking. Draco paused, his eyes darting to Harry, searching his expression. "Never mind," Harry said quickly. The twins had said it was Harry's birthday present, but it had clearly been meant for both of them. It wasn't Draco's fault that Harry hadn't been around at all, and that Draco had clearly found a bit of time and privacy to inspect the contents. "No," Draco said slowly, still searching Harry's expression. "I wanted this to be exciting. I didn't expect you to be hurt," he said, turning it into a somewhat bemused question. "I'm not hurt," Harry swiftly denied. He allowed himself to rake his eyes over Draco's body, kneeling naked on the bed before him. "And this is exciting," he breathed, staring at Draco's obvious arousal jutting forth from pale blonde curls. Harry might have been lying about feeling hurt, but it wasn't exactly difficult to let it go under the circumstances. He was far more interested in what Draco intended to do with that little jar than where he'd got it from. Draco hesitated a little longer, and Harry moved to kiss him. The kiss quickly went from reassuring to deep and passionate, until Draco finally broke it by shoving at Harry. They were both breathing heavy when they parted. Harry leaned back against the headboard again, watching Draco with heavy-lidded eyes. Draco looked dazed, but a little nervousness still crept back into his expression. I wanted to surprise you, Draco said finally. You were gone. I finally had a little bit of privacy from my mother. He hesitated again, glancing at the jar in his hand. I didn't think about the fact that it was, in fact, your present, he admitted quietly. I just wanted to learn what the fuck I was doing so I would know how to actually please you when I got the chance. Well, you've surprised me, Harry said huskily. So now you just have to show me what you've learned. It really wasn't difficult at all to forgive Draco after a confession like that. That's what I was going to do, Draco admitted, obviously having lost his confidence. I was going to show you, and then I wanted you to fuck me. I didn't intend to come out sounding like a selfish prat, he said, grimacing. The last words washed right past Harry's ears unheeded. You want me to fuck you? He breathed, eyes widening. Really fuck you? You told me I was getting impatient. I've been patient. I've waited a long time to be fucked by a boy, Draco said defensively. I'm disgustingly glad I've been forced to wait and that you'll be my first, but it doesn't mean I want to wait any longer. Harry sat, blinking at him in astonishment. You do know that while you may have learned more specifics about how the hell to go about this, I haven't, he said slowly. I still don't have a bloody clue as to what I'm doing. Draco bit his lip nervously. Well, that's partly why I don't know if I'm just being a selfish prat again, he admitted. I don't really mean to be selfish, but what I was planning, he trailed off uncertainly. Harry was all for soothing Draco's fears, and was actually grateful that Draco was talking to him like this. He realized Draco tended to be a lot of talk, and then got anxious when it came to the reality of the situation. However, considering that he was fairly certain they wanted the same thing, this was getting to be too much. Draco, I'm hard and aching. For you, he said firmly. I don't know what you had in mind, but I wish you'd get back to it. Now. I wanted you to watch me prepare myself for you, Draco finally admitted. Harry inhaled sharply, then nodded fervently his agreement. I've always been a learning by seeing rather than learn by reading type of person, he said. I'm happy with you reading the book from the twins, and I'll just learn from you, if that's what makes you happy, he added earnestly. He was willing to say whatever Draco wanted, if he'd just continue on with his original plan. Draco's smirk slowly formed again. Does the thought of watching me turn you on, Harry? He drawled the question. Oh, gods, yes, Harry said, his eyes roaming over Draco's body again. Then watch, Draco purred seductively. He laid back on the bed, bending his knees and planting his feet flat and spread wide apart. With a pillow raising his hips, he was fully on display for Harry. Harry's breathing was already heavy, and Draco hadn't done anything yet. Draco seemed to have found his courage again from Harry's expression, and his eyes stayed trained on Harry's face as his hands began to roam over his own body. Harry was transfixed by the sight of Draco sprawled out before him like this. The temptation to reach out and touch was strong, but the desire to see exactly what Draco was going to do was even stronger. He'd never thought about the idea of watching someone else wank, but his eyes grew heavy-lidded as he watched Draco's hand wrap around his cock. He squeezed, a soft moan escaping his lips, before he stroked lightly a few times. Swallowing heavily, Harry ruthlessly pushed aside the urge to stroke his own cock. He did not want to come anytime soon and stop this erotic display taking place in front of him. He watched as Draco dipped his fingers into the jar, Lifting one leg closer to his chest, Draco reached behind to probe gently at his entrance. One finger was pushed inside that puckered hole, and Harry couldn't have torn his eyes away if he'd tried. He continued to watch Draco prepare himself, another finger disappearing before both were moving in and out. Draco was fucking himself on his fingers, Harry realized, and from the whimpering sounds coming from his mouth, he was quite enjoying it. Harry flicked his eyes to Draco's face and moaned at the sight of the lust it displayed in his expression. "Gods, Draco, you're sexy as hell." Draco's lashes fluttered as his eyes closed. "I like you watching me," he admitted. "Merlin, I swear I can even feel you watching me when my eyes are shut." Harry moved. He needed to touch. He ran one hand lightly down Draco's thigh, causing him to tremble and his eyes to snap open again. "Harry, fuck me," Draco said, although his command came out sounding more like a plea. He moved quickly, dipping his fingers back into the jar of lubricant resting nearby on the bed. He smoothed his slickened fingers over Harry's cock, causing Harry to hiss at the pleasurable shock. He didn't think either of them were going to last long, but allowed Draco to direct their positions and help guide Harry's cock to where he wanted it to be. Harry was watching Draco's face closely. He saw Draco's slight wince of pain as he pushed inside, but Draco insisted that he keep going. Harry slid into that tight, wet heap slowly, gritting his teeth against the urge to simply thrust hard. Draco told him to wait when he was fully inside, and Harry was actually grateful for the opportunity to attempt to rein in some control over his body. It was so difficult because he was amazed to be inside Draco, to be a part of him. He leaned down to kiss him, Draco eagerly deepening the kiss. Eventually, Harry began to move at Draco's urging. He thrust into Draco, staring down at him. He was able to hold onto his control a little as he was focused on Draco losing all of his. Draco was giving himself to Harry in abandon. He was lost in a haze of pleasure as Harry gripped his cock and began to stroke in time with his cock thrusting in and out of Draco's arse. Draco came with a shout, pearly streams landing on his chest and abdomen. Harry was unprepared for Draco's orgasm to pulse around his cock, and it tipped him the rest of the way over the edge. Harry didn't move at first afterwards, trying to catch his breath. Finally, he reached to gently cup Draco's face. "All right?" he asked. Draco nodded slightly, smiling as he pressed his face into Harry's hand. Harry pulled out, causing Draco to wince slightly. "Sore?" Harry asked, wincing sympathetically along with him. "A little," Draco admitted, "but it's a good soreness." They cleaned up with a few charms after they'd found their wands, and settled back into the bed tiredly. Harry didn't think he could be more satisfied or happy than he was at that moment, curled up with Draco spooned behind him. The next morning, Harry and Draco went downstairs for breakfast in good spirits. "Good morning," Harry said cheerfully. Narcissa returned the greeting warmly. "Dada!" Victoria squealed happily upon seeing them. "Hello, pumpkin," Harry said, taking her from Narcissa. "And how are you this morning?" She giggled as Draco tickled her, both of them smiling. With a kiss to her forehead, Harry settled her into her feeding chair. Draco sat on the other side and started feeding her bites of porridge. Harry gave her some chunks of banana and a piece of toast before he started stuffing his own breakfast into his mouth. "Do you know how Remus is doing?" Harry asked. "He is fine, Harry," Narcissa said gently. "I believe having Severus's potion again made last night much more pleasant for him. I checked on him earlier and he is simply resting now."
"That's good," Harry said. He realized that even as long as he'd known Remus, he still didn't really know what it was like for him.
Narcissa turned her attention back to Victoria. "She is quite happy to have you both here this morning," she said.
"I'm happy to be here too," Harry said, grinning at Victoria. "I've got the whole day to relax."
"You have spoken too soon,"
Severus said, coming into the room. They all glanced up at him. Severus did not look to be in a good mood. "What's wrong?" Harry asked quickly. "Harry, come with me," he commanded, stalking towards the potions room. Harry exchanged glances with Draco and Narcissa, but hurried to follow. Severus swiftly warded the room after Harry had entered, then gestured for Harry to sit. "What's wrong?" Harry repeated, watching as Severus leaned against the mantel of the fireplace. Having Severus stare down at him with that calculating expression was not making him feel at all comfortable. "Are you certain that you need Lucius?" Severus asked. Harry blinked in surprise. That hadn't been what he was expecting. "Yes," he answered. "He's the only one who can get me that locket." Severus nodded curtly and moved to sit down across from him. "Then we will be doing this today," he said. "Today?" Harry repeated. "You are rested?" Severus countered. Harry grimaced. "Yeah, I am. I thought I was actually going to have an easy day," he muttered. He could feel his body thrumming with tension again and took a deep breath. "So, I gather you figured out how to do this?" he said, his voice stronger. "Indeed I have," Severus said, inclining his head slightly. Harry spent the next 2 hours going over the details with Severus until he could repeat the plans to the man's satisfaction. Under Severus's direction, Harry called for Winky and had her bring the things he needed, stuffing it all into his rucksack. "Harry, you will say nothing to Draco or Narcissa," Severus warned. Harry nodded at his understanding. "I'd rather neither of them know until after it's all done," he said. He looked back to Severus. "You'll talk to Remus?" "It is necessary," Severus said sharply. "I only meant whether you would tell him instead of me," Harry said irritably. "Remus knew what I planned to do and didn't question me before. I'm not sure what he'll say now that it's really happening." "I will handle him," Severus said. Finally exiting the potions room, Harry and Severus returned to the kitchen. Harry paused in the doorway, taking in the picture of Narcissa, Draco, and Victoria. Victoria was cooing happily from her position in Draco's lap, but Narcissa and Draco were watching him anxiously. Severus nodded a greeting to the others before sweeping through the kitchen, exiting through the other doorway leading to the rest of the house. "Harry?" Draco said. "I'm sorry, Draco," Harry said, walking over to him. "It seems my day is going to be busy after all." "What are you doing now?" Draco asked warily. "Severus has given me a long list of things to do. It's time for me to make things difficult for Voldemort," Harry said grimly. Draco snorted. "Isn't that what you've been doing all along?" he asked. "Maybe," Harry said, a wicked smirk forming on his features. "But now I've got Severus helping me to fuck up Voldemort's world." Six, two, four, four, two. "Harry Potter and Remus Lupin, here to see the Minister for Magic," Harry announced. Harry was both pleased and disturbed when the badges appeared. The badges indeed reflected the information Harry had given. They didn't reflect the reality that Severus was polyjuiced as Remus. He met Severus's gaze, feeling jittery. If it ever came to light what they were doing, Harry didn't want to think about it. "Present the Gryffindor. Play the situation as a Slytherin," Severus said, his tone calm, even, and meant to be reassuring. Somehow, Harry did find it reassuring. Severus's plan had taken Harry's Chosen One public image into account, and they would be using it to their advantage. Harry bemoaned the fact that he would likely never find any peace in the wizarding world, but he hadn't argued with Severus's plan. He would do whatever it took to make this all work. Harry's gaze skittered away from the Fountain of Magical Brethren that had been restored, walking with determined confidence directly to the security desk to check in their wands. Or rather, check in his wand and Remus's wand, which had been loaned to Severus. "I need to see Mr. Scrimjaw," Harry declared, before the man could run his scans. Severus didn't believe it would detect his polyjuiced form, as the false Moody had been able to infiltrate the ministry, but Harry didn't really want to take that chance. "Mr. Scrimgeour is a busy man and does not see just anyone," the security man said condescendingly, focused on weighing Harry's wand. "He will see Harry Potter," Harry said, smirking at the man and watching with amusement as the man's eyes flew upwards to search out Harry's scar. "Certainly, Mr. Potter," the man said, his attitude changing instantly. Harry listened as Severus calmly said he would direct Harry to the correct floor, as he had been there previously, negating the need for the escort that the security man was attempting to get for them. Getting into the lift, and out of sight of most of the people who had been watching, after the security man brought attention to them, Harry rolled his eyes. "That was fun," he muttered sarcastically under his breath, only loud enough for Severus to hear him. Severus smirked in amusement, but refrained from commenting due to their remaining audience. Harry reckoned he should be grateful that those who were in the lift with him and Severus were actually keeping a respectful distance. He seemed to have even more of a public image than he had realized. With a guiding hand on his shoulder, Severus directed him towards Scrimgeour's offices. Harry didn't recognize the witch in the outer office, but she clearly recognized him. "Harry Potter!" she exclaimed. "Yes," Harry said, refraining from rolling his eyes. "I need to see the minister," he said firmly. The secretary turned anxious.
"I'm sorry, Mr. Potter, but the minister is very busy today. He said he wasn't to be disturbed for any reason," she said regretfully.
"He will see me," Harry said. "Let him know that I'm here, please."
"Perhaps if you could come back later this afternoon," she suggested.
"No," Harry said, to her astonishment. "Let him know that I am here." Her gaze flickered to Severus.
"And who should I tell him is with you?" she asked.
"My apologies. This is Remus Lupin," Harry said calmly.
"I really shouldn't," the witch hedged,
glancing nervously at the closed door of Scrimgeour's office. "He'll want to know I'm here," Harry said, starting to get irritated. She obviously registered his irritation, shifting her nervous gaze to him. Taking a deep breath, she moved to knock at Scrimgeour's door. "I told you I was not to be disturbed," came Scrimgeour's cold voice when the door opened.
"Mr. Potter is here, with Mr. Lupin to see you," she said quickly.
"Potter's here?" Scrimgeour questioned in amazement. Harry could only see the witch nodding in answer, before the door was suddenly opened wider. He arched an eyebrow mockingly at Scrimgeour's shock at seeing him there. "Hello, Scrimgeour," he said pleasantly. Scrimgeour's eyes narrowed as he took in Harry and his guest. "I am surprised to see you here," he admitted. "Can I take it that you have changed your mind?"
"Possibly," Harry said, noncommittal. "Do you have time to do some business with me today?"
To Harry's surprise, Mr. Weasley appeared in the doorway behind Scrimgeour.
"Hello, Mr. Weasley," he said warmly, happy to see the man, even under the circumstances. It would probably require even more explanations later, but it was still nice to see the man, especially since he appeared to be working closely with Scrimgeour in changing the ministry.
"Harry! Remus! What a pleasant surprise!" Arthur said, smiling. He looked curious about their presence there, but still welcoming. He gave Harry a quick hug and exchanged greetings with who he thought was Remus.
"Remus, I'm surprised to see you out and about today," Mr. Weasley said in concern. The fact that Remus would not normally be active the day after a full moon had been one of the concerns, and in fact was at Grimmauld Place resting. But Severus had calmly declared that they would have to make it work. He did look exhausted, but Severus had assured Harry that he himself was not suffering from the exhaustion of the body he inhabited. Harry rather doubted that, but also knew Severus was quite capable of ignoring the demands of his body to do what needed to be done.
"I am rather tired, but fine," Severus said mildly, sounding just as Remus would. "I simply did not wish Harry to go about unescorted." Harry wanted to roll his eyes at the commiserating, concerned glances they exchanged.
"Weasley, it would appear that we need to finish our meeting later," Scrimgeour said, eyeing the friendly greetings.
Harry noticed the witch had resumed her post at the desk, watching them all in astonishment.
"Of course," Mr. Weasley said easily.
"Should I remain on hand?"
he asked, directing the question to Harry more than Scrimgeour, much to Scrimgeour's irritation.
Severus spoke up before either Harry or Scrimgeour could answer.
"Arthur, perhaps you could wait with me while Harry speaks with the minister," he suggested.
Harry darted a look at Severus, even as Mr. Weasley accepted the suggestion pleasantly. Severus was supposed to have been going in with him when he spoke to Scrimgeour. He wasn't given an opportunity to question the change in plans, as Scrimgeour ushered him into his office.
"So, what do I owe for this public visit?" Scrimgeour said with cynical amusement once they were both seated.
Harry nodded his head in acknowledgement. He was certain Scrimgeour must have been a Slytherin, and planned to ask Severus about it later to satisfy his curiosity. The man seemed to work under the concept of giving something only to get something in return. Very much a Slytherin way of thinking, and he seemed to respect it in Harry's dealings.
"I have some information for you," Harry said evenly.
"In exchange, I need your cooperation for me and Remus to go to Azkaban to speak with some of the prisoners."
"Why?" Scrimgeour asked immediately, clearly surprised and wary of Harry's request.
"Because I need information as well," Harry said, as if the answer was obvious.
Scrimgeour rubbed his chin thoughtfully.
"It is highly irregular for anyone to visit the prison," he said. "It is carefully guarded by both magical protections and the Dementors."
"I realize that," Harry said, "and I'm actually grateful to know that other magical protections have finally been established there, as Voldemort can and will take control of the Dementors again."
"You know this?" Scrimgeour asked sharply.
"Dumbledore did warn me of the possibility, and protections were implemented, but I still find it hard to believe that you know who would be able to control the Dementors."
Harry grimaced, thinking about his experience down in the well just 2 days before.
"Yes, I know Voldemort can control them," he admitted, "although I'm still not clear on how he can exactly."
"Potter, you are clearly aware of the situation," Scrimgeour said. "No contact in or out of the prison is necessary for people's protection. It is entirely unsafe for you to visit there. The human guards are heavily protected by magic, and only visit twice a day to deliver meals magically to the prisoners. Even they have no direct contact with the prisoners. It would not be likely that you would find any sane enough to give you information." He eyed Harry critically, particularly once they realized it was you.
"And if I'm lucky, insane rambling will give me the information I need," Harry said grimly.
"Is it necessary that you go there personally?" Scrimgeour asked.
Harry met his gaze unflinchingly.
"Scrimgeour, I'm making progress in this war against Voldemort, but I'm missing vital information. I'm positive that I can find that information from some of his followers. I don't want to visit Azkaban, but it is necessary."
Silence fell over the office as Scrimgeour turned everything over in his mind. "It would not be good for the public image to know that their chosen one was visiting Azkaban," he said finally.
"Glad you see that," Harry said, smirking. "I happen to agree that it wouldn't look good for you if people knew you were risking me to the fate of the Dementors and insane prisoners."
Scrimgeour scowled at him, but nodded in agreement.
"So tell me, Harry Potter, what do you have for me?"
"I'm told the article will be in the issue available to the public on the 1st, 2 days from now. I've also given you a public visit by coming here today," Harry said. "I'm sure word is already spreading that I'm here meeting with you."
"That is not enough for what you are asking," Scrimgeour said sharply.
Harry held up a hand to forestall him. "I recognize that's not enough," he said. "The ministry has wanted to be able to make public arrests, proving they are making progress. I've indirectly given you a few minor arrests already with Voldemort's attacks recently. I can now give you names to make further arrests."
Scrimjaw blinked at Harry's audacity.
"Who the hell are you, Potter?" he asked. "You are only a child yet."
Harry laughed harshly.
"I'm a child who makes damn good use of his contacts," he answered.
"I'm coming to have a great deal of respect for you," Scrimjaw said slowly.
Harry nodded his head in acknowledgement of the compliment. "With your help, and the help of many others, I'm going to make damned sure that Voldemort doesn't win," he said. "We will have a wizarding world where we can all feel safe again. You do your part to truly clean up the ministry, and I will do my part to get rid of the bastard who's attempting to take it all away from us."
"Should I be worried about my job security?" Scrimjaw asked dryly. "Considering the fact that you are already dictating many of my actions as minister."
Harry's smile was more of a grimace. "I definitely do not want your job. My main concern is dealing with megalomaniac Dark Lords." His smile turned more genuine, if a bit cheeky. "I'm happy to provide suggestions, though."
Scrimjaw actually smiled in return, shaking his head. "I'm unsure if accepting advice from someone as young as you is good protocol, but it seems to be working so far," he said.
Harry shrugged. "I'm young, not stupid," he said, "and as I've already said, I've got excellent contacts." He paused. "I've probably got almost as many advisors as you do," he said, frowning a little as that realization set in. "I think our goals are ultimately the same. To create the best possible wizarding world that we can for people, so they can live their lives freely." His voice unconsciously grew more wistful. "A place where families can live without fear and prejudice."
He made eye contact with Scrimjaw again, his voice stronger. "I'm not looking for fame or publicity. You are more than welcome to take all the credit for rounding up these Death Eaters. I'm only looking for a bit of normalcy and peace," he said.
"And achieving peace requires you to visit Azkaban," Scrimjaw said sarcastically.
"Unfortunately, yes," Harry said. Scrimjaw sighed heavily. "I have to wonder if your job is more difficult than mine," he said. "Let's hear the names, then, and after that we'll get you to Azkaban. I presume you wish to go today."
Harry nodded, before beginning to list the names and locations Severus had given him. Severus had assured him that it wouldn't compromise his position with Voldemort, but he had to wonder who would be receiving the punishment for these Death Eaters being caught. 5 of them were actually located within the Ministry, which could at least be attributed to the Ministry cleanup of employees. He did warn Scrimjaw not to act immediately on all of them. Making it look more random would help ease any suspicions. Scrimjaw was surprised at some of the names, and questioned Harry as to where he was getting his information. Harry wouldn't say, only insisting that the information was reliable. He knew Scrimjaw was still suspicious, but considering how valuable the information was, he didn't push too hard. Afterwards, Harry was given detailed and highly classified information regarding the location of Azkaban and the magical protections involved that the guards used to keep them safe when they went there. Scrimjaw wasn't happy that he insisted he would be traveling alone, with only Remus Lupin for company, but he was still allowing it. Harry was surprised that Scrimjaw was cooperating. The situation was highly unorthodox, and it was a little nerve-wracking to have this much influence over the Minister for Magic. He was grateful for the cooperation, nonetheless. He wasn't surprised when Scrimjaw insisted on escorting them personally back to the lobby, making sure they were seen by as many people as possible along the way. It was with great relief that Harry finally flew to the Leaky Cauldron with Severus and entered Diagon Alley.
"Oh, Merlin," Harry breathed, heading towards the twins' flat. "I can't believe that just happened."
"But you were successful," Severus said, only a slight question in his tone, considering that Harry had already indicated nonverbally that it had gone as they'd wanted.
"Yeah," Harry said. "I'm just not sure why I was successful. I mean, I know why. It's because I'm the bloody chosen one and all that rot. But it's still a little scary to have that much influence," he admitted.
"You did well," Severus said.
but it will only get more difficult from here." He let Severus and himself into the twins' flat. He'd already informed them that he'd be stopping in briefly, and his rucksack had been sent ahead with Winky. Fred and George had left the running of their shop to their assistants and were waiting for him. "Hey, Harry. Remus," Fred greeted cheerfully. "More dangerous deeds to accomplish today?"
"You could say that," Harry said, smiling ruefully.
"Anything we can help with?" George asked.
"Mainly, I just need you to ignore the fact that you've ever seen me today," Harry admitted. "But I could also use some more of your fireworks and such to replenish the supply I've been keeping in the cloak pockets. You and Draco used up a bunch of it the other day."
"That we can do," George said, already moving to the shelves.
"I just need your bedroom for a minute," Harry said. The twins gestured for him to go ahead, but were obviously curious as they watched Harry disappear with who they thought was Remus. Severus quickly erected privacy wards.
"I think I need to revise my opinion of those two," he said.
"They're a good lot," Harry said, grinning. His grin fell away, though, as he quickly recounted his conversation with Scrimjaw. He found he wasn't overly surprised when Severus admitted that he'd taken the opportunity to talk with Mr. Weasley to find out more about what he'd been doing with Scrimjaw and to pass subtle hints of information. Harry brought out his new cloak while Severus drank the potion to counter the polyjuice in his system, turning him back to his normal self. Harry handed the cloak over. It wouldn't do for the twins to see Severus.
"I will return shortly with the rat."
Harry nodded and watched as Severus disappeared under the cloak. He returned to the twins' main room and watched with them as their front door opened and closed of its own accord.
"I gather Remus needed to leave," George said dryly.
"He'll be back soon," Harry said, biting his lip nervously as he continued to stare at the door. Severus had refused to say how he was managing to steal Pettigrew away. Harry was fairly certain that Severus would take the punishment for his disappearance, though, just as he had for the Malfoys' disappearance. Given a few minutes to think, he was feeling a little sick about what they were doing. He wasn't regretting the decision, as Pettigrew deserved his fate, but he still wasn't all that happy he was causing the man's death. He'd kept Remus and Sirius from killing the man, and now, just a few years later, he was doing it. On the other hand, even during the events at the end of third year, he'd intended for Pettigrew to be handed over to the Dementors. He was simply handing him over to the Dementors under far different circumstances. It was disturbing to be placing himself in the role of judge and executioner, and he had to wonder if he was any different than Crouch had been when he sentenced Sirius without a fair trial. Thoughts of Sirius being sentenced brought Harry's anger back to the fore. Pettigrew deserved this, and Harry was resolved. Others might condemn him for his decision, but Harry was going ahead with the plans, and he refused to regret it.
"Harry, you all right, mate?" Fred asked in concern. "You're terribly pale."
"I'm fine," Harry said. "It's just not one of my more pleasant days."
"More unpleasant than the other day?" George asked dryly,
only to raise his eyebrows in surprise when Harry nodded.
"What could be more unpleasant than running into you-know-who in a pack of Dementors?"
Fred asked in disbelief. Harry wondered what they would say if he told them he was planning on killing someone.
"Harry?" George questioned.
Harry shook his head, knowing he couldn't tell them, even if they'd probably approve of Pettigrew finally being punished.
"I can't tell you anything," he said. "This is by far the craziest thing I've ever attempted to do, though."
"That's a heavy statement coming from you," said Fred, admiration in his tone.
"It's not an exaggeration," Harry said solemnly.
"Harry," George began, pausing before he continued, "you will still be around to come tomorrow, won't you?"
"I don't plan on dying or being captured," Harry retorted, but there wasn't a bit of humor in his voice, which told the twins more than anything that both were a possibility. Harry was extremely thankful Severus was on his side and the one planning and coordinating all this. Severus's abilities and sense of self-preservation gave him a much higher chance of succeeding with this insane plan.
"We don't want to know what you're doing, do we?" Fred stated, more than questioned.
No, you don't,
Harry answered flatly. Severus arrived back at the flat, already polyjuiced back into Remus. Harry looked at him questioningly, receiving a curt nod. Severus had a rat stunned in one of his pockets. Harry shuddered.